It's nice and cool in here. I'll teach you another Yiddish word. It's a machaya. Machaya means a pleasure. Oh, the machaya is a pleasure. Oy. See, we teach everything here. We get etymologies and P's and Q's. We get Yiddish phrases. We get it all in here, and that's fine. We have been talking about the history of Overeaters Anonymous. We've been talking about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, which obviously in 1960 will become our history, and today is actually our birthday. But we've been talking about Bill Wilson, and what we've been trying to do as best we can is to make it less about Bill Wilson and more about you and I. By relating the way Bill thinks and the way Bill drinks and the way Bill lives and lies and the pains that he suffers, the unbelievable way in which the alcoholism came into his life and it started to ransack him. It started to control everything he wanted to be. Everything he wanted to do was dictated by his alcoholism. Alcoholism started shutting doors to him. Alcoholism told him what he could and could not do. And I can relate to that because food and my eating disorder absolutely ransacked my life as well. We've seen how Bill Wilson gets the information on step one, the physical allergy and the strange mental twist from Dr. Soakworth. We see how the information of the problem comes into Bill's mind. And now we have seen how Ebby, not Bill yet, but Ebby gets the information on the recovery program from this vicious illness. Now, is it odd or is it God? Because what is going to happen in the pages we're going to cover, and the second 8 pages of Bill's story are about how God affected a recovery therefrom, from his eating disorder, and from his alcoholism. I'm not thinking this afternoon. I think that the heat in that other room just kind of knocked my brain out or something. I'm not quite sure how that works. But anyway, we're going to see how the information of the problem and the information of the solution are going to come together in this one person. And what do we know about this information? What can we surmise from this? What we can surmise is this. We do not know that Bill Wilson is the first person to get this information. We have no idea. But here's what we can bank on, and here's what we know. Bill Wilson is going to be the very first person in the history of planet Earth to take this information of the recovery that he's going to get from Ebby and the information of the illness which he got from William Soakworth, Dr. Soakworth. He's going to take this information, he's going to put it together, and he is going to move it forward. He is going to utilize it and move it. He's not just going to sit on it. He is going to take that information and he's going to bring it to someone else who brought it to someone else who brought it to someone else. And in a series of unlikely, miraculous things occurring, miracles of God, that information came to you. So let's pick it up from the bottom of page 8, the very bottom of page 8. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wonder how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility, the very thing an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened and he stood there fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? And when you look at somebody, as I've been looked at by people, I remember going back to Chicago 10 years ago for my 30th high school reunion. And I remember when I went back home for my 30th reunion, I was just there for my 40th high school reunion, I had some of the same reactions. There were people that said, you can't be Harlan Grabowski. He's dead. He died. He was that really fat guy, and he died. And I had to actually show a couple of people my driver's license because they didn't believe I was me. And that was a new experience for me. But when they looked at me, they didn't see the person that they knew from high school. They saw a completely reorganized, rearranged, different person, that I had been rearranged. And this was something that was of great joy to me. I was very grateful. I cried. I was so grateful that God had done that for me, because for them to see me in that situation and their utter disbelief was a miracle that only God could have brought about. I pushed a drink across the table. What had happened? I pushed the drink across the table. He refused it, disappointed but curious. I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. And all of us had these binge buddies. All of us had relationships. Maybe they were with the opposite sex, maybe with the same, it doesn't matter. What it is somebody that you can just eat openly with, somebody that you can binge your brains out. And I had friends that would tolerate my eating and join in as best they could, and it was perfectly okay with them. And I had friends that would not tolerate it. They weren't going to sit there with me, and I knew who was who. I knew who to call when I wanted to go out and go absolutely nuts with food. Okay? What's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me, simply but smilingly. He said, I've got religion. I was aghast, so that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. But he did no ranting in a matter-of-fact way. He told how two men, which we talked about before, had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. Little known fact in there is that this is a program of action. This is not a program for people who need it. This is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. This is a program for people who take action. There's a chapter into action. There's no chapter into thinking. There's no chapter into contemplating. This is a working program, hence working the steps. So what we're seeing here is we are going to see the emanation point of Bill coming to grips with step two. We're going to now see the way Bill is going to struggle with this idea of a God, the way he is going to see it, and the way he's going to think about it is going to change. Let's look at Bill, and let's remember that probably every person in here, every person in this room, and every person that I've known in OA over the years I've been here has struggled with step two tremendously. Four is the most misunderstood step, by a long shot. Three is the second most misunderstood step. But two is a very misunderstood step. And what people have tried to do for decades in this program that I have witnessed firsthand is they try to bring a God of their childhood. They try to bring a God from their church, their synagogue, their whatever that is, and they are trying to bring that God that didn't work for them as children, that didn't work for them as adults, that didn't bring them a Playboy bunny, or bring them a bicycle, or whatever it was, bring them a hula hoop or a yo-yo, and they're trying to bring that God into their recovery, and they wonder why they stumble and fail. I have to have a God that I do want to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my action, over to his care and direction. So what Bill is going to do and what he's going to struggle with, let's look at some of the parallels and let's pop the hood on step two. And let's see that when we've worked this vital and crucial step, that a lot of stuff becomes more and more simple. If you're a new person, fine. If you're a sponsor, fine. This applies to everybody. Whenever a person comes to me and says, I'm struggling with step 9, I'm struggling with step 4, no, you're not. No, no, I don't believe that. You're always struggling with a step prior to the one that's got you speed bumped. And more than likely, you're struggling with 2. What I have to think of and what I have to do, and we're going to mention this again in chapter 5, is I have to think of a God that I do believe in and a God that I do want to turn my will and my life over to their care and direction without reservation. I have the responsibility to develop in my heart, to develop in my soul, to develop in my insides, my neshama. Neshama is a Hebrew word for your spirit. I have that right and responsibility to develop a God that I do believe in. And the number one reason that I see myself struggling with this concept of a higher power in step 2 is because God didn't give me what I wanted. He performed miracles for all of you. He gave you cousins and brothers and sisters and money. And he gave you things, and he gave you thin bodies, and he gave you girlfriends. Oh, God. And he gave you all these various things, and he didn't give those things to me, so screw him. He let me wallow in pain, so screw him. Am I willing to believe? Am I now willing to believe in a power greater than myself? If we have the time, we're going to go read Appendix 2 on 567. Not right now. Not right now. We're going to stay with Bill's story. Okay. Leslie? Okay, thanks. He had... got religion. I was a guest, so that was it. Lesser. Okay, but he did no ranting in a matter-of-fact way. They had told of a simple religious idea, right? No? Okay. The result was self-evident. Bottom of page. Oh, it worked. Thanks. You got to keep me to task here. Leslie's in charge of getting me on task here. George isn't here. He had come to pass this experience along to me if I care to have it. As we go through chapter 7, which we're not going to have time to do this weekend, as we go through chapter 7, what's very, very repeated as instructions for being a sponsor is if the person doesn't care to have it, leave them alone. Love them game. Okay. Okay. I was shocked but interested. Sorry. Jews help the Gentiles. Okay. All right. I had to be for I if I cared to have it. I was shocked but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be for I was hopeless. Now, hopeless is a very good word because what Tom Washington taught me is hopeless means I'm out of ideas. If there is anything in me that still thinks how I'm going to do this myself, I'm going to control this myself, I'm going to amend what you're telling me, and I'm going to do it my way, I will not recover. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that proper temperance pledge I never signed, my grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folks and their doing, his insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. I had always believed. Now watch your capitalizations here. When there's power in that capitalized, he's talking about God. Excuse me. I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much a precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation. But that was as far as I got. with ministers in the world's religions, I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me, whose love, superhuman strength and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. To Christ I conceded the certainty of a great man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him, his moral teaching most excellent. For myself I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. And that's what a lot of us do with religion. We kind of take it cafeteria style. We take what we want, we leave the rest. And I'm not up here to criticize how a person believes in their religion. What I'm up here to do is to share with you things that are so pertinent to step two that they must be discussed. That in Bill's mind, he is struggling with a higher power that was given to him as a child. Bill's grandfather, not the one that raised him, Griffith, the grandfather Wilson, was a drunk too, and he had a spiritual experience on a mountain in Vermont also, and he just felt that wind going through him. So I guess Bill is looking at this, and he's looking at this this whole picture, and he's rejecting God on the basis of the same things you probably might have rejected him on. Starving kids, wars, injustices, all the headlines that we all see every day. I mean, you know, you see this stuff and you think to yourself, well, what the heck? But what he's not doing yet, and he's going to do this in just a minute, is he's going to realize that he has to have that God's hand to hold on to. He has to have that hand to hold on to. And so his viewpoints, his paradigm is about to shift. And when it does, he'll never find it necessary to struggle again. Now, he's going to drink again. Notice I didn't say he didn't drink. He still continued to drink until December 14th. Okay. That's right, Leslie? That floored me? Keep going. Oh, the wars that had been fought, the burnings, the chicanery, the religious dispute had facilitated made me sick. I honestly doubted whether on balance the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe and since, the power of God in human affairs was negligible. The brotherhood of man a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss universal, and he certainly had me. But my friend sat before me and made the point-blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There's no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and that was none at all. Right there is where Bill Wilson is not looking for the burning bush. He's not looking for the splitting of the Red Sea. He's not looking for those miracles which Cecil B. DeMille can recreate better than anyone else. Okay? He is now looking at Ebi. He sees a man in front of him that he knows is a drunk, that he knows is not a religious person, that he knows now who is sober. This is where it begins. This is that emanation point for him of step two. There was nothing to argue about. There was no more arguing. Now, I'm going to give you the same challenge. Because if you look around, I'll show you a miracle. And I've said this before, and I've traveled this country in service to OA. And I've been at retreat centers that are so beautiful, and I've been in conventions, just gorgeous. Look around this room right now. And I don't know what you got in your head, and I don't know what you got stashed up in your room. I don't know what you got in your purse. I don't know what you got stashed in the car. But I'm going to tell you what I see. I see a group of people who are compulsive overeaters. And I see beautiful faces. And as I look around, there isn't one of you that is currently compulsively overeating at this moment. Look at where we are in Los Angeles, California. What a beautiful day. We went out for lunch, some of us, and we went to the place over there, and what a gorgeous, gorgeous day. You know how many February days or January days you get like this in Chicago? None. None. Okay. So right there, Bill is beginning his shift. He's beginning to look at God in a very different way because the evidence of Ebi's sobriety is overwhelming any of these other ideas that he has in his heart and in his mind. And this is what I have to do. Yes, there's going to be war. Yes, people are going to do crazy things, think crazy things, go crazy places. But that's not up to me. Leslie? That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in the human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. So now Bill is now looking at things differently. He's working step two. He's coming to believe that a power greater than himself can restore him to sanity. Right there is your emanation point. Okay? Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. Oh, his mind's going back a little bit. Okay. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, why not choose your own conception of God? Bang! There's no arguing. It's your conception of God. The only thing I'm called upon to do is to, if it's my conception of God, why do I want to drag the hippopotamus out through the dog door and bring a God into my program that doesn't work, that's going to kick my ass, that didn't give me a girlfriend, that didn't give me a Schwinn Stingray, that didn't give me a Duncan Yo-Yo, that didn't give me a hula hoop, or whatever it is God didn't give me. And we all have things in our life that we look at and we say, God, what, blah, 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 blah. I need that God to come with me and hold my hand that does work. I need that God to come with me and hold my hand that I do believe in. Not a God that I don't believe in. So we're seeing how Bill is dealing with step two, and we can parallel it to our own lives. I hope that this is more your story at this point than just his story. The statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point upon a foundation of complete willingness. I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. Excuse me. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. You don't have to wait for page 83 for beautiful promises. They're all through here. Okay? The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself, and so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. And faith must be worked. Let's face it. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. and as a human being, there are things that are going to happen in my life and things that are going to happen in our lives that are going to challenge that faith. There are going to be times when I need God, and that's why there is a step 10, and we're going to get into that more tomorrow morning. But I'm never permanently eradicated from fear, selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, and anger. And as those things, if I harbor those things, and we're going to get into that in a little bit, harbor means to give safe haven, they're going to trigger the mental twist. The mental twist is going to drive me into the food. The food is going to give me the effect, but it's going to trigger the physical allergy. The physical allergy is going to mean that I will not be able to stop because it's going to produce a craving beyond my control. So I don't need a lot of reasons to believe in a God other than the fact that I have two choices. Believe in God and work the steps or die in the food. There's no choice C. There's no choice C. Live in God's world, work the steps, die in the food, and live a miserable, miserable life. There's nothing good about the world of Raisinets. There's nothing good about the world of Almond Joys. While we're on that subject, why do people buy Mounds bars? What is the point of a Mounds bar? You can get the almond. I know that, but what is the point of that? I don't understand. This must be something I'm just not up to speed on. Okay. Now, Ebby comes to Bill in November, Armistice Day. He takes a drink. He comes to him in November of 1934. Bill is now going to go into the town's hospital for his third and final hospitalization on the 13th of December, 1934. And the next day is going to be the 14th of December, 1934. And what is going to happen is going to be Bill's sobriety date. Bill is now in the town's hospital, and he is there as a patient, and he is separated from alcohol, and he has been doing the Oxford Group tenants, the Oxford Group's six-tenant program. And he is now in the hospital, and he is waking up on the 14th of December, and he is sober. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. Now, let's listen to his language and see if we can parallel it to some of the steps we know today. Okay. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him to do with me as he would. Step three language, if I've ever heard it. Okay. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. We see Bill working the first three steps that we know today in the towns by doing those sentences in our head. We can see that he has worked what we know today to be the first three steps. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend, watch your capitalizations here, take them away, root and branch. I have not had a drink since. So we see Bill working 1, 2, 3, 6, and 7. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Step 5. The first 5 steps, and 6 and 7. We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. Steps 8 and 9. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. 8, 9. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. So we see he is now working the first 9 steps of what we know today. Now, if you look on page 86, you're going to see very similar language between step 11 and I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. My friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. So he's worked step 11, step 10. He's worked every step we know now except 12. Let's see where he goes. That I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Simple, but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory, followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. Bill Wilson maintained throughout his entire life that he had a vital spiritual experience in the town's hospital where the white light of the room filled the room and he saw God and he had a vital spiritual experience in the towns. For a moment I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor to ask if I were still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head saying, "Something has happened to you I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who had such experiences. He knows there are real." Now, Bill Wilson is a selfish, self-seeking son of a bitch. He is a drunk, and if he can't spend it, drink it, or God knows what with it, he wants nothing to do with it. Now, let's see what happens to Bill Wilson now that he's had this spiritual experience. And the next paragraph is, "While I lay in the hospital, the thought came to me. The thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others." So he's now thinking about other people. He's now thinking about other human beings. And this is the transformation as we see it. And as I work this program, and as we work it together, we get out of ourselves constantly. As we work the steps, as we do step 10 incessantly, resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help. Step 12, get out of yourself, help others. This is a program where incessantly I am reminded to get out of myself. It's very, very important. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, thank you, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associate to remain skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by ways of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But, now pay attention if you're sleeping, I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. And he comes home. And he's trying to sober these people up. Dr. Bob was a far better sponsor than Bill. But he's trying to sober these guys up, and most of them didn't want to get sober. But he's dragging them off bar stools, taking them to the Oxford group meetings, and most of them didn't want to freaking go. He comes home and he says to Lois, he says, "I have this vision that I'm going to help sober up drunks. I have this vision. It was so clear to me, Lo. It was so clear to me that I'm going to do this. And nothing's working. It's not working." And she turned to him and she changed the course of human history when she said, "But you're sober." "Oh, yeah." It was the first time in his life he had remained sober. She could have turned to him and said, yeah, you're right, I guess you should forget it. She could have turned to him and said, yeah, I guess you're right, just do your own thing. And no, she said, but you're sober. Change the course of the world. Years later, she was asked about that, and she just said, it just seemed like the right answer. It just seemed like the only, it seemed so obvious to her that it was really the only thing to say. Okay. And also, when we read this, we realize that, again, no matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. Here's Bill Wilson, co-founder of AA, and he's got waves of self-pity, and there are things going on in his life that are less than optimal, and he just keeps working with other people. You know what one of the promises of this program isn't? It gets real easy. It's not one of the promises. And here's the other thing I see all the time. People want to work the steps so that everybody else in their environment will get it and do what they want them to. It doesn't work that way. That's not what this is about. Okay. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. Okay. Then sometimes early Joe asks, work with another. Oh, many times I have gone to, right, Leslie? Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. I'm talking to a man there. I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. We commenced to make many fast friends. Remember the part where he had the friends and then he becomes a lone wolf? Well, guess what's happening now? He's making friends. Only this time, they're not being friends with him for pictures of dead presidents. They're being friends with him because he has something that they want, but in this other sense, he's willing to share it freely. We speak and we understand the language of the heart. There's no other people that speak and understand the language of the heart, the language of the soul. We know what it is like to live in hell. We understand. Nobody has to translate it for us. We get it. It's going to say in the book, to those who understand, no explanation is necessary. To those who do not, no explanation is plausible. Nobody has to tell you and I that we are compulsive overeaters. I can tell. Now, I was raised by a man who did not speak English. So I can always tell if you're thinking in English or you're not thinking in English. I can tell that in about 2 seconds. Not if you don't say anything, I can't tell. But if you're speaking, I know if you're thinking in English or you're not. I also know you either know this from living it or you don't. You don't have to tell. You don't have to hit me over the head. And you know it too. You know it too. And why are we talking about that? Because didn't Dr. Silkworth tell us something? Didn't Dr. Silkworth, back in the doctor's opinion, say something about in order for the message to be carried, it must have depth and weight? Didn't he say that? Remember that from this morning? The message must have depth and weight. That's what it has to have. If it was just that easy of saying, stop eating, you wouldn't need a meeting. We'd put up a sign, stop eating, or whatever, and that would be the end. Okay. The joy of, has grown up among us, which is really a wonderful thing to feel apart. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty, I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. Having seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out, I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery, which has not been overcome among us. In one Western city and its environs, there are 1,000 of us in our families. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. I thought it said they seek. I just wanted to be sure. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 150 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill toward men. And Bill Wilson died, as we know, on January the 24th, 1971. Okay, before we break, and we're going to come back and do chapter 5, we've seen where step 1 comes from. Step 1 comes from Dr. Silkworth. The idea of the mental twist that drives me into the food comes from Silkworth. The mental twist will drive me into the food because it is seeking the effect. The mental twist is not saying to me, eat more raisinettes, you'll crap in your pants more, you'll get fatter, you'll be even uglier to the girls, you'll drive them away even faster, whatever, such a thing can happen. It doesn't say that. What it says is, eat the food and you'll feel better. You deserve it. We're going to come to the point in the next chapter where we're going to look at some of the nuts and bolts in that. What happens when I eat the food is I also trigger the physical allergy. The physical allergy is triggered when the food goes in the body. You're going to go back to your meetings and people are going to say, I crave Raisinettes. I crave Twix bars. No. You may be thinking about them, but unless you eat them, you can't crave them under the context of our definition. Step 2. What's the solution? We have a mental twist and we have a physical allergy. What we're going to see on page 23 is the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. Why is that great news? Because there's nothing we can do about the body. There's nothing we can do about the physical allergy. Roy has the physical allergy. He was born with it. He's going to die with it. But Roy's not eating Oreo cookies today, not because of any other reason of willpower. Roy's not eating Oreo cookies today because he doesn't want them. Because he's working the steps. He is bringing God into his life. He's marshaling that power that only his higher power can muster to quiet down his mental twist. He works with people. He gives of himself. He works the steps. He does the work. He doesn't eat Oreos. Mental twist, quieted by the spiritual awakening. Physical allergy, immutable, irreversible, nothing we can do about it. We're now going to see the rest of the steps, and we're going to go back and do chapter 5 at 3 o'clock when we come back from our potty break. I don't even care. I'm just so thirsty at this point. I don't know. That's iced tea. Okay. Yes.
You're going to have to walk with me, though, because I've got to go potty. And I'm going to try to get back and get off my feet for 5 minutes.
Okay, we're going to get started with chapter 5. We're now going to talk about some steps that are the most misunderstood steps in the program. I talk to people, and so do you. I am around people, and you are too, that have no concept of how simple this is. In our zeal to make things more complicated, in our enthusiasm to muck things up so that we don't have to do anything, we have taken these very simple things, these very simple concepts, and we have complicated them beyond comprehension. My confusion is equal to what my ego does not want me to see. I'm going to say that again. My confusion is equal to what my ego does not want me to see. And as we go into steps 3 and 4, we're going to find that these are very simple steps. I've been in meetings with people for decades, and so have you, that say, I turn that over to God, I turn that over to God, and they don't really understand what they're talking about. When I say I turn something over to God in 3, that means I am now doing steps 4 through 12. 3 is the formal terms of surrender that will catapult me into putting a notebook and a piece of paper, or a notebook and a pencil in my hand. What Bill did when he wrote chapter 5 was he was very nocturnal. He was up all night and slept in the day. And he had a yellow legal pad, just like that one. And he was laying in bed, and he knew that it was time for him to lay out how it works. No chapter caused more controversy and fighting than this one. But he said that it was like almost as if some other force was controlling his pencil. And within 20 minutes, he wrote chapter 5, one of the greatest pieces of spiritual literature that the world has ever known. Chapter 5, How It Works, is the instructions for working steps 3 and 4. We have all manner of things that you can buy, just come up with money. You can buy them for money, and you can store them someplace until you move out of your current home or whatever. And they are worthless to you. You don't need them. You don't need those things. What we're going to do is we're going to just take a look at step 3, and we're going to take a look at step 4 together in this chapter. And hopefully what we're going to do is we're going to clear up some of those misconceptions. Hopefully we're going to simplify these things down to a very easy denominator. Hopefully we can hold God's hand and we can do these things and understand why we're doing them and understand the destructive nature of not doing them. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. I call that, it's not called that, but I call that step 0. Because that, to me, is ground 0, step 0, emanation point, whatever you want to look at. If you've decided you want what we have, what is it? Have you decided that? What is it that we have that you somehow want? What I saw that people were not eating, what I didn't see was what my sponsor helped me with, Tom. He says, they're not eating, and they are doing so happily. If you are struggling with food, if you are fighting food, if you are fighting the world, and you're fighting your job, and you're fighting the people in your life, I invite you to come and join this program and to walk these steps with us. I invite you to work these steps as if your life depends on it, because it does. I invite you to come in and do this and give this a more open chance in your life than you've ever had before, than you've ever given it before. Now, I'm not going to promise you that your boss, your sister, your mother, your father, your kids, whatever, your next door neighbor are going to suddenly get it when you do. But what I'm going to suggest to you is this, that by working this program enthusiastically and by working this program from the heart every day, you will change. You will see the world differently. And it may change nothing, but if it changes you, it changes your world. I invite you to come and join us. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Listen to how the big book repeats things. The result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. The result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Half measures availed us nothing. Recovery is a vending machine. You didn't expect to hear that today, did you? Recovery is a vending machine. If you have a vending machine and the product you want costs a dollar and you put in 99 cents, guess what you're getting out? Nothing. Absolutely. You'd be lucky to get your 99 cents back, right? Seriously. You're getting nothing. You're either all in or you're not in. There is no half-assed measure. There's no half of recovery. You're either in recovery or you're in the food, and there's no middle ground. In everything I do today, everything I think today, everywhere I go today, everything that is said, everything I do, I'm either moving toward God or I am moving toward the food, and there's no middle ground. My sponsor, Tom, used to say to me, you know you're in recovery if everything you did today, everywhere you went, everything you said, everything you ate, if it was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, are you okay with that? Because if you're not, you're keeping behaviors and thoughts secret unto you, and they will manifest in the form of active raisinets. Okay? Here are the steps. Oh, wait. We asked his... Sorry. Thank you, Leslie. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. I'm not going to read the steps. Let's go to page 263 and let's see where they come from. Let's go to page 263 and let's see where the steps we work come from. These were the six steps of the Oxford Group movement as it was at that time. Number one, complete deflation. Number two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Number three, moral inventory. Number four, confession. Number five, restitution. Number six, continued work with other alcoholics. And this was the step situation or the steps that they were working at that time. And Bill kept seeing these alcoholics slipping through the loopholes. Now, there's no foolproof step situation, but what he attempted to do was he attempted to close some of, you can go back to the chapter, he attempted to close some of the loopholes that these guys were sliding through. And that's why you have 12 today and 6 then. But there was a lot of controversy. There was a lot of fighting going on. Just as if, could you imagine if we're meeting here today in this room, and all of a sudden we inform all of OA that it used to be a 12-step program and now it's a 24-step program. Could you just imagine the controversies and the how many offshoots of OA do we have now? Like 8,000 of them or something? You know, this group and that, the stand on your head group and the spit nickels group or whatever. You know, they got all kinds of 90-day and how and all this other stuff. Anyway, I digress. Okay. Let's go to page 60. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, where's the description of the alcoholic? In the doctor's opinion, Bill's story in the first four chapters. And you have people in this program that are coming in and they're saying, hi, I'm whatever, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and they don't know what that is. The definition of a compulsive overeater is this. It is a person who was born with and has an unnatural mental twist. And the mental twist will drive them incessantly and destructively into the food. The mental twist will tell that person that it is perfectly okay for them to eat the food, and the mental twist will wear them down, and against their will, they will eat the food. A person who is a compulsive overeater also feels the effect of the food. They will feel that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by eating it. Then once they've eaten the food, they have an actual physical allergy, an actual physical craving for more of the same. In my body, not my mind, my body, the more I eat, the more I want. The more I want, the more I eat, and it's just endless. And that concept is what a compulsive overeater is. So newcomers come in, and we direct them to chapter 5. It would be like me directing you to a trigonometry textbook when you're in second grade. Okay? So we have to go through this, and we have to explain what this is. And we see person after person, even some old-timers, that don't really have the knowledge of what a compulsive overeater is. Okay? The chapter to the agnostic, chapter 4, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. Now, the ABCs are read, bless you, the ABCs are read at just about every meeting that we go to. Let's go through the ABCs in a little bit more depth and see if we can't expand the understanding of what we have in the ABCs. Number one, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Now, we've just gone through the definition of an alcoholic, and we could not manage our own lives. If I can't eat because of the allergy, and I can't keep from eating because of the mental twist, I'm powerless over food. And that nature of that powerless condition comes from Silkworth and the first four chapters. But Silkworth gives us that parameter of what this is. Two, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Now, here is a concept that a lot of people do not come in with. They do not come in with this concept that working the steps will quiet me down. They come in with a concept that some human power, money, romance, fame, fortune, what have you, will fix them. Very, 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 very few of you don't believe in something. Very, very few of you don't have this concept that if I was a movie star or if I was a quarterback for the Bears, because we need one, if I was this, or, you know, if I had a hammer or whatever it is, then what we have that concept that everything at that point would be okay. In Yiddish, there's an expression, it's azoy gaitis. What does azoy gaitis mean? It means it's always something. My mother used to throw her hands up at me and say, azoy gaitis, azoy gaitis. It's always something with you. So no matter what our situation, it becomes very temporary. And we look around the world and we see we want this different or we want that or whatever it is. That no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, we're still trying to blame other people. We're still trying to fight battles that just don't exist. And there's four things that compulsive overeaters have spent their life doing. They lie. They assign blame. They keep score in their relationships, and they fight battles that just don't exist. And in the fighting of those battles and the lying, it says in the big book, we distort and we diminish. In that concept, in that incessant mental gyration, we have assigned blame to our overweight condition or bulimic anorexic condition to something or someone outside ourselves. And wow, we're going to look for God, that God could and would if He were sought. That God could and would if He were sought. In order for me to believe that statement, I have to have worked step two. And in order for me to work step two, I have to have a God that I do believe in. I have to sit down and write a job description for a God that I do believe in. I have gone through human things. I, like most of us, my income has plummeted. Now it's just starting to come back up around. But my income plummeted. I was married for 17 and a half years. 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, my then wife came home and said, I want a divorce. She informed me that she wanted a divorce. I tried to talk her out of it. There was no talking her out of it. She wanted a divorce, and she told me she had fallen in love with someone else, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, life goes on, so that the God that I have in my heart and the God that I have in my head today is a little different than the God that I had prior to that. I'm getting older now. I'm getting whatever. So the God that I hold hands with on a daily basis is a different God than He was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it is. So you see that one of the descriptions I have for God is flexibility. One of the job descriptions I have for God is the ability to metamorphosize into something other than what I see in Him today or what He sees in me today. So these are very important concepts, these ABCs, and we read them and we don't even pay attention to them. We care nothing for what they say. We've heard them so many times, we've stopped hearing them. So I hope today we've made the ABCs come alive just a little bit for you today so that we understand that this is very important. If you've been to college or you've been to high school, you can't be a junior in high school without first being a sophomore. In order to take a 400 level class, you must have completed 100, 200, 300 level classes. These are the prerequisites for the work we're about to do. Okay. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and what do we do? And here's another reason why you can't recover out of the 12 and 12. And here's another reason why you can't recover out of the OA literature. You can only recover here because this is the only volume in which an exact instruction for what to do is posted. We have people running around saying, I turned this over to God, and I turned that over to God. And you might as well have turned it over to Goodwill or something, because it's not all we're doing is we're saying, God, take my boss. God, take my cat. Whatever that is, or fix this problem. That's not turning it over. There's action and more action that's involved. Let's see what the action is, and let's look at it in a very simplistic way so that we can blow the lid off confusion, so that we can no longer be paralyzed by that confusion when we look at steps 3 and 4. Let's look at them together. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. The road to hell, by the way, is paved with good intentions. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. We've just defined something selfish. Selfishness is one of the keys to our life here. The chief activator of our defects is self-centered fear. But selfishness is that script. It's not just room. It's not just that you're not sticking to my script. Oh, yeah, hilarious. It's not just that you're not sticking to my script. That's not the problem. The problem is I have a script. And the mere fact that I have a script shows right there and then that I don't trust God. If I have a script, that means that I know better than God. So when we talk about selfishness, we talk about script. When we talk about self-seeking, we're going to define that in the next paragraph, okay? What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. Again, there's that blaming again. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion? Listen to the language here. A delusion is something that a magician would use in sleight of hand to fool you into thinking something was real, but it's not. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? We're trying to power drive what we want into the world to satisfy our basic instincts of life. We're trying to satisfy our need, our want, our desire in all these basic instincts of life, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But we want what we want, or we want everybody dead. And the carnage usually begins and ends with us. Carnage usually begins with us and ends with us. It's why we love a good resentment. What's the payoff to a resentment? We can abdicate responsibility for our life. We can blame the other person and justify the most errant nonsense. I love a good resentment. Oh, I love a good resentment. If these people would only do this, if these people would only do that, if they'd only give me what I want, if they'd only this, if she'd only that, if he'd only those, then everything would be fantastic. And that's not true. That's not true. Okay. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self-pity? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of others, of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. We think we're so smart with our lies. We think we're so smart with our manipulation. We think we're fooling somebody. you know what? They didn't fool us when they tried to do it. What makes us think we're fooling them? Nothing but ego. We're so much smarter than them. We're so much more cunning than them. They see through us like a window, and we see right through them. But what we're going to do is we're going to embark on different actions, different situations. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. I can't rid myself of selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, fear, and anger any more than I could rid this building of its roof with my bare hands. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. You want me to say it again? A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. Just because I know these things, if I don't work the steps, I am still going to die because of them. I must work the steps. Okay. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help. That is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that the hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. What beautiful language. It's an arch that we pass through to freedom. Come with me and let's work the step together. That when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Watch your capitals there. These capitals are God. Okay? Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Those are the third step promises. They're beautiful. You don't have to wait for page 83 to get promises. You don't have to wait for anything. They're right here. They're in the here, they're in the now, and they're beautiful promises. That everything will be provided if I stay close to him, God, and do his work well. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, don't make me say this alone. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, I don't know any better example of this, but I have a daughter. She doesn't speak to me anymore. She doesn't like me. She got it in her head a few years ago that I am the worst person in the world, and she doesn't want to speak to me. So she hasn't spoken to me now for almost 3 years, except for 1 hour of time in 3 years. But she was not in that frame of mind a few years ago, and she used to speak to me. And when she did, whoa, I'm all sedriddled here today. Okay. When she was not in that place in her life, if I would have said to a 13-year-old Hannah, Hannah, go clean your room, she would have used language that would make you blush. She she would have used golf words, lots of them, and words you can't put on TV or something. Now, I want you to just take a different example, same scenario. I say to my daughter, Hannah, I have a MasterCard here from God. There's no limit on it, and we never have to pay the bill. Money is no object. Is there anything in your room you want updated, improved, anything you want brand new? There wouldn't be anything in that room but German Shepherds. Looking around like, what the heck happened? And that is the deal that God is making you. What are you hanging on to?